Greetings, friends, and welcome back to the podcast whose sole reason for existence is to remind you that this world is a magical and miraculous place. And my guest this week, Kurt Busch, shares a lot of stories. We actually laughed our way through this interview, and let's just say that we included rodeo clowns and somehow demolition derbies got involved. I mean, it was a really fun conversation, and one that while I was producing it, I was laughing again because it was just so great. So my guest, Kurt Busch, is many things. He's a certified internal family systems practitioner, trauma-informed leadership coach, speaker, and author. And then, as you'll hear as a bonus, he also likes demolition derby. And Kurt's magical miracle story is pretty simple, but it happened during COVID. And I think most of you remember the isolation, the fear, the sorrow that the general world was experiencing. And so Kurt tells a story of having to make a profound change in his life and just how the universe or God or spirit made sure that he and his family were taken care of. All right, let's get to it. My conversation with Kurt Busch.
We often talk about friendships and relationships, even now as adults. Like, you know, our kids are teenagers, so we don't have a lot of like friends with little kids anymore. But when we think about our friends as a couple, we'll often say, well, these people have fridge rights. Like, you can walk into my house, open my fridge, take whatever you want out of it, eat whatever you want, drink whatever you want. Kirsten, can I tell you, I'm from the Midwest and I'm a people pleaser. So describing myself in any positive way is so hard. This is the curse of being a Midwesterner. But here's what I'll say. I looked at this question when you sent it and I thought, how the heck am I going to answer this question? And I've been putting off doing it. So I'm going to just do it on the fly, Kirsten. I would describe myself as a curious human, trying to be as compassionate and kind to others and creation as I can. That's how I want to show up. I don't always hit that, but that's how I want people to experience me. I think I would probably also then say, like, I am a leadership coach and I do help people learn how to live fully and lead authentically. It's kind of an outflowing of the ways that I try to live and the ways that I see as most beneficial for those around me.
Yeah, I love that. You and I, my listeners don't know that we were just talking about Iowa is full of crops for cows and to make plastic and whatnot. But the cows are also like all the methane and poop going into everything. Like, we already vibed on the whole environmental consciousness thing. So,
yes.
So I get it. So I have to tell you, I love your answer because someone told me once, because I lived in Portland, Oregon for 23 years.
Okay.
Someone said, oh, you know, the East Coast, people there are just kind of brash and rough and they're very direct. And then the West Coast, people are super passive aggressive, which is actually true. And they said, but you know, the Midwestern people, they just lead with their heart. They are wholehearted. And so do you think it's part of that wholeheartedness where you're reticent to kind of, you know, say good things about yourself?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, I think part of it is there is a Midwest culture that says, serve other people, look out for other people, look out for neighbor. Like there is part, and I think part of that's kind of agricultural in nature, you know, that sort of we need each other. Like, I think there is some of that, like, look out for others first. I also think the Midwest has this sort of false modesty. Here's how I would describe it. I worked in HR for a number of years, and part of my job was to, like, bring candidates in from other parts of the country and interview them for a day and take them out to lunch. And I'm in a small Iowa town, 6,000 people. And I get out of a car with this candidate and we're standing behind the car in a main street kind of setting. And we have to cross the road, not at a crosswalk. Right. And we're standing there and cars from both directions stop and wave us on. And I know this is going to happen. This person who was from the East Coast had no idea this was going to happen. This happens every single day. And he's like, what are they doing? Like, well, they're letting us walk. They see that we want to get across. There's no cars behind them. Like, it is literally one car on each side that is 10 seconds of, you know, putting us out for 10 seconds. But here's what I would say. There's every chance those people in those cars are like, what the heck is going on? Why are these people use the crowd? Like, there is this sort of Midwest nice, this false modesty where it looks really nice and it feels really nice, but deep down, we probably resent the people we're being nice to. So that's sort of the shadow side to the Midwest nice, that false modesty of like, I don't want to be a burden to anybody, but I do, but I'm not going to. Right. If that makes sense. So I have a healthy dose of that as well.
So you're saying they're kind of cursing you in their hearts. They're like, oh.
I think it's possible, Kirsten. Yes.
Oh my God. That's actually really funny, but it actually might be true, you know, because I did grow up outside of Chicago from like 10, 11 on. But you know, when you grow up in that kind of space, you don't, I'm going to totally go off onto a tangent here.
Go.
Tell me. Okay. Living in Santa Fe, I miss Midwestern food, like the hot dogs and that kind of stuff. Do you have things like that in Iowa? And then I love me a good rodeo / state fair. And do you go to those in Iowa, and what are they like?
Okay. First question. This is going to sound crazy. Midwest has pizza. There is Midwest pizza, and not Chicago. Chicago is its own thing. And listen, I love some good Chicago pizza. But there is a thing called Quad Cities pizza. That's a different kind of pizza. That's very good. That's Mississippi River, Iowa, Illinois pizza.
What is it like?
It's like a thick layer of cheese with like crumbled sausage underneath the thick, like more cheese than you should ingest in a month, with like crumbled breakfasty sausage underneath it. It's very good. It's definitely healthy. And taco pizza. Do you know about taco pizza?
No.
That's a Midwest thing. It's like a pizza with lettuce and tomatoes and sour cream. It's like a taco on a pizza. That is a Midwest thing. So pizza is a thing. Meat is a thing.
Yes.
We eat very good meat. That is true. I don't always love some of the implications of the meat that we eat, but there are some very good and probably even some sort of sustainable meat practices and sources around where I'm at, but a lot of good meat. What was the second part of that question? The state fairs.
Yeah. State fairs. There's a rodeo. There's several rodeos here locally that I love going to because, you know, we have the long history of Spanish colonization here and their horses. And so there's a big legacy of 400 years of horsemanship and riding and bulls and all of that stuff. And so, but I don't think Iowa have rodeos? I mean, I love state fairs too.
Well, I live in a region I'm not from. So I think in a way I'm still learning this area. I think there is a rodeo crowd. I'm not sure that there are rodeos happening like there would be rodeos happening by you. But I think there are people here that are really into like riding horses in a competitive manner. I don't swim in those circles. So I horses scare me, Kirsten. I'm just going to say it. Horses scare the crap out of me. So I am not in those circles. I choose life. I do think state fair. Yes, Iowa has. We do some state fairs. I don't know the last time I went to one. My kids are a little older. They're beyond the state fair age. But listen, I am not ever going to turn down a tractor pull or a demolition derby. And I'm just going to name that. That's more transparent than I thought I was going to be. But I am never going to turn down a tractor pull or a demolition derby with a corn dog.
Wait. What's a tractor pull?
Kirsten, get out. You don't know about tractor pulls?
No, but I do. I have been to Demolition Derby and I love them.
Yes. This is a guilty pleasure. Okay. Here's what a tractor pull is. You take a tractor and you make it the most powerful thing you've ever seen in your life. And you paint it and you put a name on it. And then you hook it up to, like, they call it a sled that has like automated weights that move. So as the tractor pulls it, it gets heavier and you pull it. Yes, exactly. And you pull it until you can't pull it anymore. And whoever pulls it the farthest wins. Now, these tractors are like they are like the hot rods of these are not like farm tractors. These are like purpose built. And listen, I can't believe I'm saying this out loud. I love this stuff. I've never admitted this on a podcast. So here we are, Kirsten. But these are like the hot rods. You should YouTube tractor pulls. It is it's a guilty pleasure.
Wow. You know, when I was living in the Pacific Northwest, I was dating a guy and we'd always try to find kind of interesting, strange things to go to. And we found this demolition derby near Walla Walla, Washington. And we went and I was like, oh my gosh, I experienced serious YOLO. I wanted to have a car and I wanted to be, you know, a junker car, of course, because these are not, you don't do cars that are pristine and beautiful, but basically everyone gets into this arena, I guess you could call it. And you just try to take each other out, but not at high velocities. It's like very, you know, maybe 10 miles an hour, maybe 15, because, you know, you're hemmed in by the other cars.
Yeah.
So you kind of have to figure out where to get some, and you know, everybody's wearing helmets and they're wearing their safety, whatever. Yeah. So, you know, people don't get hurt, but it's kind of fascinating to just, it's like blood sport, but with cars. I don't like blood sport, but it's fun watching an old junker that's like barely running.
Yeah.
Kind of try to make it to the last car standing.
Yes. Yes. Here's a couple of things I will say about both of these. When you Google tractor pulls, you're going to see large amounts of black smoke coming out of these. And that concerns me. So I am going to name that I go into these conflicted. Right. So I just want to name that. Also, Kirsten, I've actually done a demolition derby before and it is wild. And I was a younger human and my neck tells me I should never have done it. So just for the listener, maybe these are things to watch, probably not things to do.
Oh my God. Where did you find the car?
Oh man. So when I was way younger, I worked in a body shop, like in high school, just out of high school, I worked in a body shop. I worked in cars and people would like abandon cars or they would get in a crash and like they would tow, the shop would tow the car and then they would just say, it's not worth the cost to get it out of the hold or whatever. So I would just like, you know, pay the scrap value for the cars and like, they would still run. You couldn't drive them on the street, but they would still run enough to do this with.
Wow. And you know, the one that I saw, people like really beefed up their cars and like put armor on and it was like an intense brutalist work of art, you know,
let me say this, Kirsten, this is going weird directions. I love it. You just make it so comfortable. I just want to talk to you. I have a very different relationship today with things like aggression and violence. I have a very different relationship with those things today than I had when I was 21. Blood sport, I think of the gladiators, like it all makes me very uncomfortable today.
Yeah.
But I'm probably not going to turn down going to watch one, but I have a real tension inside of me when I do that.
Oh yeah. I can imagine, you know, I've, one of the things I have always wanted to be in a demo derby. I'm just putting that out there. The other thing I've always wanted to do, which is crazy, and because of my age, I could never run fast enough or be agile enough, is a rodeo clown. You know, those clowns that kind of, you know, they don't look like your typical clown, but they do look funny. They're like funny. And I mean, everybody has their own idea of what that looks like. They're usually dressed kind of funny, but basically they're out there, you know, in the arena when a rider gets bucked off the bull or maybe he's, you know, the horse, you know, bucks him off and you kind of have to distract the bull, carefully. And then they put these barrels out so that if a bull comes towards you, you can hide behind the barrel and the bull's like, wait, how do I get to you? There's a barrel here. But I mean, I could not run fast enough to save my life, like literally save my life to be a rodeo clown, but I don't know. I've always wanted to be one. It's very strange.
Yeah. So can I ask questions about that?
Sure.
So a rodeo clown, I think I understand the idea of distracting, right? Like they're kind of volunteering as tribute there, right? Like come after me. So this other person, are they employing tactics that keeps them from getting mauled by the bull, or do they just assume I'm going to get run over? Well, is that part of the deal?
Oh yeah. Well, they usually wear pretty bright clothes, of course, you know, like kind of almost garish clothes. So that once the rider gets, you know, bucked off and is on the ground, I mean, what you want to do is keep the rider from getting trampled by the bull, or even, you know, the bull's annoyed. It's not happy. Even just going after the rider, not even necessarily trampling them. And so you kind of become this object that is a little bit loud and disorienting, like your clothes, and you shout and stuff to get the bull's attention so the rider can kind of scamper off and find safety. I like the idea of it just because I love the idea of doing something completely bonkers.
Yeah.
And also dressing up, you know, who doesn't want to step out of their persona one day and do something totally. So that also kind of enchants me as well. So that's my story about being a rodeo clown.
Yeah. Well, that was my next question, is what's appealing, but I hope you get a chance to try it once.
Me too. I gotta, there's so much that needs to happen before that. A lot of body work, I think. So when you talk about your neck, I'm like, I get it. I get it. You know?
Yep. So last question about the this is not a rodeo clown pod, but we're kind of going that way. Are they getting in the barrels at all? Or is the barrel just a barrier?
Yeah. The barrel's a barrier. And I don't know if they're weighted. I mean, I've seen them, you know, the bull will kind of nudge up against it and it's knocked over the barrel, but there's always more than one rodeo clown. So that if, you know, there's one much further down the arena, and so they can run and distract if anything. So the bull kind of, I mean, my impression is it gets disoriented and is like, oh, wait, there are all these things happening. Where should I pay attention? And by then, you know, the rider's off the horse, you know, if there are horses, because I've also seen, with that kind of thing, the bull riding, there's usually someone on a horse in the arena as well.
Okay.
After the rider falls off and the bull is distracted, the rider can come in, scoop up the rider who's fallen off. And
from the horse?
From the ground. Yeah. They just kind of like arm them up and ride them off. And then of course everybody kind of melts away and the bull, there's a chute and it just kind of like naturally runs towards the chute most of the time. So
Okay. Fascinating stuff.
It's very complex.
It all scares me a lot, but I love to hear you talk about it.
Yeah. It is scary. I'm just going to share this with you. I went to a rodeo in Walla Walla and they had the bull riding and whatnot. And outside of the rodeo, there was a huge fair, like almost like not as big as a state fair, but a big fair, you know, with lots of things to do in both inside a big covered area and outside. So lots and lots and lots of people. So we're sitting up in the stands watching the bull riding and the bull's like really persnickety and kind of annoyed. And I would be too, frankly.
Same.
And we're watching and all of a sudden the bull, they're having a hard time getting him out of the arena. Everything's over. It's just the bull. And the bull just sees the far end of the arena, which has like a steel kind of like pliable wall that is probably about 8 feet tall or so. And it just starts making a run for it. And it jumps over the wall, catches itself, but the wall kind of crumbles because it's not, you know, it's not a hardcore wall. And the last thing we see is the bull running off into the fair.
What?
And I was just like, and everybody's like screaming and like the people and the horses are like, oh my God. And like running out of the rodeo to like catch the bull. It was the craziest thing I've ever seen. I just thought, you know what? Everybody's going to, and the bull is like in the middle of the fairgrounds. And I'm sure you're thinking, oh my God, I'm surrounded by rodeo clowns. I don't even know what's going on right now.
Surrounded by rodeo. I love that. This is nightmare fuel, Kirsten.
It is. It absolutely is.
Yeah.
Let me ask you the second question, which is, did you grow up in a religious household? If you did, what did that look like? You know, I've had every kind of person on the show, from atheists to Baha'i, you name it. You know, for a lot of those people, the religion they practiced in their childhood has evolved over time to a different understanding of what maybe connection to the divine looks like. So that's to say, all answers are valid. I can't wait to hear yours.
Yeah. Yeah. I grew up in a very kind of conservative Christian home. I remember like my earliest memories of that were like church on Sunday, church on Sunday night, twice a day. And then Wednesday night as well. I think the other piece of that that stands out to me is my parents were custodians. So like my dad had another full-time job. My mom stayed home with us kids. But then like they did all the cleaning in the church, they mowed the yards, they set up for events. And obviously then us kids, like we were a part of that from a really young age. So that like I have really fond memories that taught me a lot of really positive things about service and giving back and all that kind of stuff. And then there's some other weird things tied up in that too, that aren't as positive or fruitful, but yeah, I mean, that was my experience all through high school. Actually met my wife at youth group, in high school, which I'm pretty grateful for. But yeah, I mean, definitely then like into my 20s, like it shifted, my face shifted a little bit. And, you know, I think everybody kind of has that same sort of like, now I get to reconcile this for myself. I get to kind of work through this process for myself and see what I believe and what I think and where I land on some things. But very Christian home growing up.
Okay. And, you know, I've not heard of this. You know, I have interviewed very conservative Christians on the show, and I have not heard of going to church twice on Sunday. So it's like the first one, your regular kind of Sunday daytime service. And then at night, was it kind of a get ready for the week service? Or I'm so fascinated.
Yeah, I think this is honestly, this is a Dutch thing. I think this is like a Dutch Reformed kind of thing, because it, like I live in a Dutch community now and there are still churches that do this today. The Sunday night was always a little more, I'm going to say, informal. You know, everybody dresses a little different. I'm not sure today what that looks like, but when we were kids, we got to like dress a little less nice. And it was a little informal, meaning that there was still like a pastor, the same pastor was doing a sermon. But the music was like a little less structured, a little more participatory. But not largely different. Way less attended, far fewer people. Yeah. But it wasn't really geared in any direction, any different kind of direction.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I don't know. That's so intriguing to me. I mean, so many people, they, went on Sunday morning, of course, and then they went on Wednesday. I mean, I've heard that before, but I haven't heard, I know nothing. Did you say Dutch Reformed Church? I know nothing about that lineage of, you know, Christianity. It's kind of fascinating. You know, my father was Norwegian and Swedish, and, you know, I met his, of course, my grandparents, but his father, you know, they're known for their stoicism.
Yeah.
And they're kind of, you know, they're kind of quiet and reserved, I guess you could say. Someone tried to explain it to me that like in Norway and Sweden in the winter, you're, because the weather, you can be alone for like 6 months. And so you learn to just not talk to anyone because you're snowed in the old days, you know, like 200 years ago. So I don't know if that's the case with why they're so stoic and kind of reserved and quiet. But I think the Dutch people are also known for being stoic as well. Like, a little more reserved. Is that true?
I mean, I think the like Dutch reform circles, yes. I mean, not to get all nerdy, I could get nerdy, but the history is like the Netherlands was kind of wild and crazy. And then Dutch Christians came to America to be able to like escape the sin, if you will. Right. And so then I think what that kind of bred in America for Dutch reform circles was sort of this legalistic, like really tight guardrails around behavior. I think Stoicism probably in a sense of like, we're just going to isolate from like worldly sort of sources and worldly sort of voices. I mean, that's probably the most negative view of it, but there's a gracious view too, that that says like, I don't know, Dutch reform circles are really have been historically really connected and dependent upon liturgies, which are, you know, which I think are really beautiful. They connect me today to others in that tradition, you know, 400 years ago, which I think is really beautiful. But I think those two can get confused, even by people in the faith tradition, to say, man, that liturgy feels boring and rote and maybe even stoic on some level. And maybe that's bad. And maybe we need to be a little more vibrant, all that kind of stuff. But the Dutch Reformed tradition has many, many branches, Kirsten. Like, yeah, there have been many, many splits and many, many conflicts. I think there's three or four different variants of it, even in just in the county where I live.
Wow.
That all would say theologically they believe the same things, in terms of, you know, eschatology, end times kind of stuff, salvation, all that kind of stuff, but have very different views on how to live that out and what role the rules play and what role, you know, interactions with the broader culture plays and that sort of stuff. Very, very different in those terms.
I wanted to just clarify something. Were you saying they came over to escape the sin of the Netherlands?
I mean, I think that's what people would say. I don't know that I'm advocating for that as like the reality, but I think the feeling probably was sort of a pilgrim posture, you know, of like, well, we can't practice our sort of way of living and worshiping in a culture that is so anti God, which again, I'm not advocating here, but, it was a pilgrim posture, which is why, you know, if you stop somebody in Iowa or Illinois or Michigan, there's a ton of Dutch population in Michigan too. Ask people, you know, what are the Dutch like? They would say uptight, quiet, boring, strict, right? The exact opposite of what you would experience if you went to the Netherlands today. That's that sort of like pilgrim, like in America, this is sort of what we're establishing as a Dutch community, right? Opposite of what they left, what they escaped, right?
Kind of makes me want to go to the Netherlands now.
Yeah, I would love to go to the Netherlands for sure. Yeah.
I mean, I'm very intrigued. I didn't think I'd ever be intrigued by the Netherlands, but here we are.
Yeah, for sure. And like, I think there is a lot of beauty in all of, you know, I hit the less gracious part a little more than I should have hit some of the gracious part. But there is some beauty in all of that for sure.
Well, I mean, just coming together in community and being supportive, I think about your parents being the custodians as well. Yeah. And just talk about you growing up in this, you know, church on a whole different level than the rest of the people growing up or attending this church. Your family had a super intimate relationship with it to keep it beautiful, to keep it functioning, to keep it a welcoming space for others. And so that's next level. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Also, I can't even imagine how much work that was for your parents, because
it was a ton.
You know, I mean, getting my dad to mow our lawn was a nightmare. So then you also have to mow the lawn of the church. Oh my God.
Yeah, no, that's fair. It was a lot of work. And there were a couple of us kids that chipped in. Like, the older we got, the more we could chip in and help. And yeah, I mean, I'm really fond of that time. I mean, I was never scared of the church, right? Like, it wasn't big, scary, intimidating, you know, of the building or the institution. I mean, there's some real important principles that were built in that time to say, you know, give of self for the greater good sort of thing, and sacrifice for the cause, if you will, or like give back, that sort of thing. I mean, it's really impactful for me. I'm really grateful for it, but it was, yeah, it was challenging. Like there were some days I don't want to mow the churchyard. I just want to hang out and play Nintendo. Right.
Yeah. Or go do a demolition derby. Yeah.
Yes. That too. I mean, all the things I could do with that time.
I just find the different ways that people connect to that which we cannot define are kind of fascinating.
Can I ask you, how would you answer that question? How did you grow up in terms of faith and religion?
Well, you know, I grew up overseas. So from a very young age, when I was really young, I lived in Guyana, South America. And then in, I guess you could say, my formative years, which who knows when those are anyway.
Good question.
In Pakistan. So I was, you know, surrounded by the call to prayer and, you know, it was very normal for me growing up to be awoken every morning when the dawn, when the sun was coming up to the imam singing from the top of the tower over the city. And so it's really beautiful, but not only that, we traveled everywhere. So I got to see lots of different ways of worship and lots of architecture and all sorts of other things. I think my listeners are so friggin' bored of hearing this from me. But because of that, you know, of course, it changes you forever to see the different ways that people approach the divine and, you know, whether it's through food or art or what have you. So I've always kind of, you know, I've had an affinity for reading folk tales and fairy tales because I think that's another way that humans try to describe or explain their experience with things they can't understand.
Yeah.
Also to entertain because there was no, you know, TV 300 years ago. So telling stories by the fire to entertain the kids and the adults and what have you. So I'm always looking for ways that humans approach the ineffable and try to explain it or describe it. Because everyone has their own point of view. And I find it fascinating and I love it. I love it. As long as you're not harming other people or hurting other people, I love it. One of the things that I also find so intriguing is for so many people who grew up in a church world on Sundays, the meal after church was a tradition of paramount importance.
Yeah.
You know, whether it was you went back to your house to share food and it was the same thing every week, or whether the community came together and had a buffet or a, you know, potluck or whatever. But I really love to hear these stories. So did you guys do that?
Absolutely. Absolutely. My grandma, my mom's mom grew up a block away from the house I lived in as a kid. So we all went to the same church. We'd go to church in the morning and then we'd go to grandma's house afterwards. And grandma would have like the cans of pop that we would only get as kids at grandma's, you know, there'd be fresh baked cookies. And that was every Sunday it was sort of the rhythm. We go to church, we go straight to grandma's, we're there for about an hour, and then we go and do whatever else we're going to do. But that was non-negotiable. Gathering time. My wife would have the same story. She would say the same story at her grandma's house in her grandma's basement. There is something really special about food, right? Yeah. I love how you put it. Like, I think no matter the faith tradition, no matter the sort of broader view of divine, there is something about food and being filled and, you know, reaping the benefits of the earth to eat and feed us and provide. There is something really beautiful about it. I love the way you put it.
Oh, I mean, I have to say that, you know, it could be anything from a full sit down feast to, like you said, soda and cookies and the kind of soda that you loved. And okay, let me ask you a question. So were your parents very much, because my mother was, we were not really allowed sugar ever.
Okay.
Like we were, you know, our cereal, and this is okay, back in the day when they didn't add all this extra sugar to things, very plain Cheerios, you know, Kix, you know, maybe every once in a while she might get a wild hair and buy Honey Nut Cheerios. You know, we were very excited when that happened because the extra sugar. So when you went to your grandma's, was it you were like, oh my gosh, we don't really get soda at home. We don't get cookies at home. So this is really special.
Kind of. If you could see a whole view of me, you'd be like, yeah, that guy had sugar as a kid. So sugar was never, sugar was never off limits for us, but we had a lot of like off brand. We never got name brand stuff. My parents were very frugal, very cost aware. Yeah. And so we would get name brand stuff and like different kinds of pop. And during like normal life, we would often get like half a pop, not because it was sugar, but it's because pop was expensive. So we would go to grandma's and get a whole can. Right. And we get to pick what it is and we get the whole can all to ourselves. We don't have to split it with anybody. And like that was the treat for sure. But yeah, no, not sugar, but like we got no name brand. We got the store brand all the time, Kirsten. And some, I don't know, some store brand is actually better, if I can say that. But probably not all, but some.
Probably. I mean, my mother had a long, 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 long relationship with this couple that lived in Park Ridge, Illinois. They were friends of her parents. And so the relationship continued when we were growing up. And so we'd go and spend the weekend with them twice a year, once in December, where they would take us to Michigan Street. And we get to see all the Christmas windows back when they were unreal in the stores. Where Marshall Field still existed. You want to talk about beauty and just like ridiculous over the top amazement. I mean, as a kid, you're like, oh my God.
Yeah.
But they were Christian Scientists. I did not know this as a kid, but they were Christian Scientists. And they would always have multiple boxes of Lucky Charms waiting for us. And I was like, you know, I love the windows, but if I could just sit here and eat, put my face in that box of Lucky Charms for the whole weekend, I will do that. I will do that. I always wanted to like put some in my suitcase so that I could take, cause you know, we were not allowed that kind of food. So there's something about being a kid and kind of having this experience of, it's not illicit food, but it almost feels like it's food that is naughty or dangerous and you can only have it on special occasions. That kind of, I think, I don't know, informs you for the rest of your life. So I just love hearing about, you know, food creates belonging. It creates community.
Yeah.
You know, you can build a family with food, even if they're not blood relations. And so I just love asking that question because I think it's different. It's different in the South versus the North. It's different on the East Coast versus the West. And I think it's a great way to ask. If you ask about the food, you find out about community and belonging.
Yeah. And I don't know. Here's another thing. I don't know if this is Midwestern. I this might not be Midwest, but we often talk about friendships and relationships even now as adults. Like, you know, our kids are teenagers, so we don't have a lot of like friends with little kids anymore. But when we think about our friends as a couple, we'll often say, well, these people have fridge rights. Like, you can walk into my house, open my fridge, take whatever you want out of it, eat whatever you want, drink whatever you want. Like, that's sort of the like, you've made it. Like, these are the highest level of friends we have, is if you can walk in my house, open my fridge and just take whatever you want. So I don't know if that's a Midwestern thing, but it goes back to the food thing, right? Like, there's some value placed on this where we're going to eat or drink together and you don't have to wait for me to get it for you. Either one of us can initiate it.
Okay. We need to design a t-shirt that says, do I have fridge rights?
Yes.
And I love people that. Walk around and they wear it. And some people will get it and some people will not.
Yeah. Make it happen, Kirsten.
Yeah. The list of my t-shirt ideas is long. So.
Give me the best one.
Oh, God. I can't think of it right now. It might be the fridge one, just because it's so... I often come up with strange band names or t-shirt ideas because I just think you can have a conversation with someone and you're like, oh, my God, that would make the perfect band name.
You know? Do you have a band name? Do you have one off the top of your head?
Of course I don't. No.
Okay. It's send like, one to me.
Yeah. 10 in the morning or 10:43. I need more coffee. Fair. Well, let me ask you the main question of the podcast, which is, I would love to hear a story. It could, or stories. It can be more than one of an experience or something you witnessed where you feel like you saw something that was magical, miraculous, or mysterious.
Yeah. I love the question. And I thought about this for a long time. Okay. There's a little bit of a setup. Is that okay?
Yes.
I can talk too much, so you can interrupt me whenever you want.
No, you're perfect. You're the perfect guest. You have your own podcast, so you know you know what I mean? You know the ebb and flow of what it looks like to have a conversation.
It's true. You might not have fridge rights, but you do have interruption rights. How about that?
Great. I accept.
Okay, great. So, I don't know, 2006-ish, my wife and I got married in 2006. 2006-ish, we found a church plant that had just begun in a community we didn't live in. We just moved to a community and we like walked into this church plant and loved it. We fell in love. We made some connections right away. We invested and volunteered right away. Well, we met a couple. Their names were Kent and Amy. We met them at this church. They were one of the kind of founding families of this church. And they had kids that were, I don't know, 7 to 10 years older than our kids. And we started to grow a relationship with them. We looked at them as sort of the mentor couple for us. They had always been the people that we were like, your kids are so great. Can you take ours for like 6 years and do whatever you're doing to our kids with your, with, you know what I'm saying? Vice versa. And they always said no. And I resent them just a little bit for that. But we loved them. Kent and Amy were such an important part of our lives for nearly 20 years. We moved out of that community in 2019 to the other side of the state of Iowa for me to take a different job. And we shed some tears that we were moving away from Kent and Amy. We just felt like they poured into us all the time. They invested so much into us as a couple. Like they were that couple that was just ahead of us, just a little bit, you know? And we loved them. They were great. Made such an impact on our lives. So we shed some tears. We had a dinner with them and we walked away. A month later, they ended up moving into the same exact community that we moved into. At the same time that I was moving, that I was accepting a job in a different community across the state, Kent was interviewing at a different company in the same, literally the same town. He couldn't say anything to us at the time. So a month later, they say, hey, surprise, we're going to move into this same community. And that was like January of 2020. And I don't know if you remember 2020, Kirsten, but we needed each other bad. Yeah. We didn't know anybody in the community. I was pastoring a church. I didn't know anybody in the community. They moved in. They didn't know anybody. We were yet again each other's people. I think we would say they were the most important people for a season, for that season of our life here in this place. And I think they would say the same about us. And that sort of like coincidence that we're both going to the same place where we don't know anybody is just one of the wildest stories I can tell. And they continue to be great friends. Like we have on the calendar once a month, we get together and have pizza with them. Again, food, right? We have a standing date once a month. We get together and have pizza because they're our people. And we just could not be more grateful that they happen to be interviewing in the same town that I was interviewing in, completely unknown to each other.
That is wild.
Yeah. Yeah. And this is not like Omaha. This is a town of 5,000 people. So this is not like, hey, we're moving to a big city where there's lots of jobs and opportunities. This is a very small kind of niche community.
Yeah. Talk about, I mean, what comes to me is, yes, I remember January 2020 because, you know, in the next few months, it kind of the world was shutting down and nobody really had any idea what direction things were going to go and what was going to happen. And there was a lot of fear and frustration and anger and I think grief, tons and tons and tons of grief. And I remember that. And to just think that you were in the middle of making this complete change of life to a new job, really small community, and the world is shutting down. And you want to talk about even people who are in large cities with lots of friends and a big support base, the epidemic of loneliness and grief and isolation was profound. And so here you are, you know, it's January. You're like, wait, what's happening? You know, what does this look like? How are things going to happen here? And then you're in this, and then all of a sudden these people who mean so much to you, who are kind of your family.
Yeah.
move into the same town in a in an era or a world that is shutting down.
Wow. It's such a good, I mean, pandemic aside, I mean, I've had to do some grieving moving across state. I mean, you've moved, right? You know, like there's always some grief that comes with that. So I've had to do a fair amount of that for myself. I didn't know I had to do that in January of 2020. So I was angry about some things too. This community we live in, like, I love it now. The grieving has helped me love it. But at the time, like it's a very, I'm going to say isolated community. It's a very sort of insulated Dutch community where, so many of the people here have generation after generation of family. It's sort of a go to school, go to high school, go away to college, come back to raise kids sort of place. And it can be a little closed off for outsiders. So pandemic aside, it was even just a like, man, we don't feel like we belong. And grief that we didn't understand is making us angry. Like all those things are in play. And then we have this couple that we love and love us come in and we can be that community for each other. It was just a real gift. Now, again, the picture's different today, 6 years later, like grief has been felt. And I feel differently about community today, but it was absolutely what the four of us needed.
Well, yeah. And I just keep thinking, what a way to be fed, you know,
in such
an unexpected way.
Yeah. Yeah. Unexpected for sure. For sure. I don't know what the last 6 years look like without the two of them around.
That is remarkable.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a gift.
Oh my gosh. And also so beautiful. You know, I mean, I think probably when you were moving, you didn't know what you were going to need. You kind of, like the rest of us, had no idea what the world was going to bring.
Yeah.
And it's almost like everything was set up for you two, as well as your friends, you know, to be taken care of and to not feel alone and not be scared by themselves in this weird world that was kind of unfolding. Wow.
Yeah. I love that story. I love getting to tell it. I mean, there is part of me that's like, hey, could you not have told us you were coming when we were shedding tears? But they didn't know they were coming. They, you know, wasn't like our best friends like held something from us. It was just a timing thing. But yeah, it's been a real gift. I just, like, 2 weeks ago, I officiated a wedding for their oldest son. I officiated a wedding for their daughter. Like, all these things are post 2020. So like, these are family life experiences that we don't have without the two of us ending up in the same, or the four of us ending up in the same community together. Just a real gift.
My conversation with Kurt. I'm so grateful that he came onto the show and that he has such a great sense of humor and that we had the very best time. Kurt's also the co-founder of the Brimstone Coaching Group, and he has his very own podcast called Live Fully, Lead Authentically, a Brimstone Coaching Podcast. There are going to be links for all sorts of delightful items in the show notes, so make sure not to miss those. I kind of love making this podcast of mine because I get to meet such splendid human beings. And Kurt definitely falls in that category. And how lucky am I? Everyone, don't forget to follow. Don't forget to subscribe. Make sure you keep track of this podcast and the new stories that I'm bringing you every week. And a little rating and review wouldn't hurt either. Just putting those little bugs in your ear. Thank you for listening, and here's my one request. Be like Kurt. Lay down in faith. Make a pact with God or the universe or spirit. Make a pact that you will believe in that spirit, that you will believe in that God, that you can lay back and trust that all will be well.
I think what Kurt did on faith is such a beautiful thing, and look how it turned out. Kurt and his family were taken care of in ways they did not expect. So be like Kurt and have faith in this creation. Have faith in that energy that moves the planets and the stars. And have faith in a world that absolutely has your back